Today on The Grave Talks, tragedy at Goatman Bridge, a conversation with Lila Olivari. After witnessing her brother's fun with a Ouija board as a teen, Lila Olivari developed an interest in the paranormal. From then on, the once tranquil house she lived in would be invaded by ghostly sights, noises, and sensations that could not be explained. Lila's curiosity in the supernatural persisted into adulthood, and she eventually found herself in Texas at the site of a gruesome KKK murder at Goatman's Bridge. After that, she'd visit many more infamous haunts and investigate them. Today, she's a member of the Warren Legacy Foundation. And in today's episode of The Grave Talks, we hear her story.
So my interest in the paranormal got sparked in childhood. I have my grandpa who lives in San Antonio, and he had a Ouija board. And for whatever reason, he thought it was a good idea to give it to my brother and I. So my brother took it, and, you know, we didn't really know any better and messed with it. I didn't. My brother actually did. And we just started having stuff go on in my childhood home. I would have friends come over. They would refuse to go to his room. It would feel like someone was watching you. It was just things would happen. I would have my friend. One day I was getting ready. And now I know it's a doppelganger, but I was getting ready to go out with a friend. No one else was home. And I heard her come in and I heard her clearly say, "Hey, what's taking you so long? Hurry up." And I go out in the hallway to say something to her and there is nobody there. But I heard it clear as day, her exact voice.
Yeah.
It scared the hell out of me at the time. I left the house. I didn't want to come back. I also had another time when I was alone in the house listening to the radio. You know, we had the old timey speakers, the radio where the buttons would go up and down, the slider.
Yep.
So I was listening and the volume kept moving. So I go in and look at it and I actually watch the slider go up and down and making the volume move. So it was just stuff like that. I didn't really understand it and it scared me. So I just wanted to better understand it so it wouldn't frighten me anymore.
Did all of this begin to happen after the Ouija board entered the home?
It did.
Interesting. So tell me about the Ouija board itself. You said your brother had it. Were you a participant in the use of the Ouija board?
I'd never used the Ouija board, thank God. And my brother actually has it to this day locked in a ice chest at his house. He couldn't get rid of it. He tried to throw it away several times and it came back always. So now he just keeps it locked away.
Tell me about what you heard of his use with it. What was he using it with other people? Was he using it on his own or what was happening initially with this thing?
He was just using it on his own, you know, just kind of messing around with it to see what it was about. And didn't really think anything of it either until he actually would have the worst of it. He said when he was home alone, he would have like bangings on the wall. Like everyone was just like going crazy, trying to break in and there was nothing going on. And that was always what happened when you were alone. It never happened. Like I didn't hear it with him in the house and he didn't hear it when I was in the house. It always happened to us individually.
Did he know what he was doing with it when the uncle gave it to you all? Okay, here's how this works.
He just, like I said, he just gave it to us. Like, you know, you would give someone a stuffed animal.
It's it. Here's the Ouija board in Candyland. You guys decide what you like better. Okay.
It's crazy. Blows my mind now that I know what I do. But, you know, hey, he didn't know any better, thought it was fun and learned very quickly that it wasn't.
Sure. I mean, so things start happening after he's using the Ouija board. How quickly do you guys realize or attain that it had something to do, that it was connected with the Ouija board?
Honestly, I never put it together as a child. I didn't until I got older and started looking back on it and realized that's when the activity in my parents' house started happening. And that's when the weird, creepy feeling, and it was always his room that when you would just feel like someone was watching you. But I never put it together until I got older and started, you know, looking into the paranormal and all that kind of stuff and realizing that's where it started.
Did he realize it at a similar time?
He did. And he, like I said, he took it with him when he left. And when he said the same things was happening, whatever room he had that Ouija board in, the same things would happen. Yeah. And then that's when he started realizing that's what it was. And that's when he tried to throw it away and get rid of it and couldn't.
So tell me about that. That in itself sounds like an interesting story of trying to get rid of this thing and it returning.
I mean, he said he would literally put it in the trash can. You know, the trash day would come by, they would come pick up the trash, and then he would come in like a day or two later and be sitting in the garage, sitting, you know, just sitting somewhere back at the house. No explanation.
Yeah. It just kept coming back. Did he ever, did he, as you all got older and everything, and it just kept showing up, did you ever look into, well, how do we eradicate this stuff? How do we reverse what happened?
He has asked me recently, but honestly, like I said, he just put it in, that it was his solution to put it in the ice chest and lock it up and leave it in the garage. Because he, what he's scared of is he doesn't want that to get on, you know, someone else to get a hold of it and something happened to them.
Okay.
So that was his solution.
Interesting. So an ice, like a freezer ice chest?
Yeah. Yeah. Like you would put like a cooler that you go to the beach with.
Oh, okay. Okay. I see what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to say somebody's going to get chicken nuggets. So then they end up using a chicken.
No, it's not in with the chicken nuggets.
Like, hey, let's use this wing as the planchette and see what happens. You know,
The kids start playing with it.
Yeah. It'll be the inspiration for the Ouija Happy Meals, which I'm really excited about.
Oh, that would be amazing. You get spirits and you get a nugget.
Exactly. So you had these experiences in your house in childhood. Did your parents realize these things were going on?
My parents did. My mom is super uber Catholic religious. Mm-hmm. She didn't really acknowledge it. She later, after we left, got the house blessed and everything stopped. But she doesn't really like to acknowledge that kind of stuff, which is, I think, another reason why we didn't really talk about it a lot, because it's just not something that she believes in it, but she just doesn't think you mess around with that to this day. She, you know, tells me I'm going to hell for what I do.
What? Typical mom. Yeah. Isn't that lovely? Exactly. Isn't that lovely? We say typical mom too. Mom's telling us we're going to hell.
Well, you know, you just kind of laugh it off. What can you do, right?
Exactly. Why did she wait till you all left to bless the house? Why did she do it while you were there to kind of help with this?
I don't think she really wanted to acknowledge that it was going on, but after we left and the stuff was still happening and she was at the house alone, that I think that's when it really started to bother her. Cause my dad's a big hunter.
Sure.
We're down in the South. So he would be gone for like a week at a time and she'd be at the house alone and didn't like it.
Okay. So it really started to stand out to her more and she couldn't kind of mentally brush it off as, it's the kids making noise.
Exactly.
The kids aren't there to make the noise anymore. Okay. Interesting. So as you continued through life after having these experiences in your childhood home, did things stop as you moved out on your own to another location?
Yeah, I never had any kind of experiences like that, but it always just piqued my interest. And I was always, from that age on, I was just always super interested in the paranormal.
Yeah. How did that continue? What did you do?
It first started just with the shows, like typical trying to watch that. And then I started getting into a community. I met someone who actually does tours out in Denton, Texas. There's a place called Goatman's Bridge.
Okay.
And I started doing tours with her and she goes to different locations as well and does investigations. And I was with her doing those and I met more and more people. I've met people who have abilities, that kind of stuff. And I've just really snowballed into it.
What is the legend or the lore of Goatman's Bridge?
So Goatman's Bridge, there's a big city here called Denton, Texas. And before it was Denton, Texas, it was back by this street called Old Alton. So there was a community out there and then there's a river out there, but it's really stale and nasty. Mm-hmm. And people would have to cross this bridge to get to the community. And the community just didn't survive because of the bridge. You know, the cows would be in there and the kids would be playing at the same time. A lot of them got sick and died. But in that community, there was a gentleman there named Oscar Washburn. And he was African-American and he sold goats. That's why they called him the goat man.
Okay.
So he would cross. He didn't live in the community. He lived separate up the road. And he would cross the bridge and go into the town and sell his goats to the townsfolk. Well, one of the days he decided to put a sign on the bridge that just said this way to Goatman so the people would know where to find him. Well, unfortunately, back in it was about in the 1800s. So the KKK was very prevalent.
Okay.
They took exception to him putting a sign on their bridge. So they waited for him to come home and they put a noose around him and they hung him from the bridge. When they came back to check on the body was gone. it was just nothing there. They searched in the water. They searched in everywhere they could look. And then they got panicked because they thought he could recognize them. So they went down to his house. They burned down the house and killed his family, but they never did find him. So he is supposed to haunt the bridge. He's not a bad entity, but there's a lot of people there that go out there and they do a lot of, you know, they use a Ouija board, they do rituals. So they've brought a lot of dark stuff to the bridge, but it's not necessarily Oscar. Oscar's one of the good spirits that's out there.
Yeah. It sounds like a lovely neighborhood.
It does.
We don't like you, goat man. We're going to hang you right here. But totally. Those things were very prevalent at that point in time.
Yes. Unfortunately.
So the lore, the legend is that of Goatman, or Oscar. Is there any, or tell me more about what do people have happen on this bridge today?
They have all sorts of things happen. There also is a very evil spirit out there that they call Steve. And Steve is believed to be, was a grandmaster in the KKK, does not like women. So a lot of women are affected. They get scratched. We've had people on the tours that just get this uncomfortable feeling like they're about to cry. And as soon as we walk them off the property, they're fine. He likes to mess with them, pull their hair, that kind of stuff. He just doesn't like women. And he's one of the, like when he's out there, there's other spirits out there that we've communicated with. But when he comes out, it's completely goes quiet. Nothing else is going on. You get nothing. You don't talk to anyone. And you start getting negative communication. Like if you use, a spirit box or anything like that, you have just negative curse words at you, leave, get out of here, that kind of stuff.
It's an interesting thing to think about someone who was such a vile human being in life, in death, also very vile.
Yes.
It makes me wonder, because so often people go to, oh, it's a demon. It's a this or that. And I wonder a lot about, you know, evil in our world, whether it be humans doing evil things to one another. I mean, this certainly sounds like a man who in life, if you saw him today, you go, that's evil. That's yes. Evil what he's doing.
Yes. My friend actually did research on him and he went to trial for he had several wives, but there was one he was trying to get to marry him and they were on the train ride. He actually was violating her and hurting her to where she finally tried to get some poison to try to escape from him to kill herself.
Uh-huh.
We had to take her to the hospital and she passed away at the hospital. Her on the certificate of death, it literally said cannibalism. Because he had chewed her breasts, her thighs, everything. And there's transcripts of the trial from what, because she lived to tell what happened when he went to trial on it. And there's transcripts out there that show all the vile acts he had done. So 100% evil person. And I believe if you're evil in life, when you die, you're not going to change.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's kind of one of those things where was this person ever like the rest of us or were they born evil and literally were evil and yes. Just as demonic as a demonic spirit, but living on this earth. And when they died, they continued on.
That
kind of makes you think more about that because you read the headlines of these insane, horrible things that people do to each other or their own families or their own children. And all you can go is that's evil. It's not just like that's an evil act. That person is evil.
Yes, 100%.
And it makes you wonder, were these, are we living amongst demons in terms of some of these people and always have been?
I think they're more just influenced by the demons. They're not, everyone likes to throw away the D word nowadays.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's, as prevalent as people like to think. But I think, like you say, it is present in people who are living and they've, invited it into their lives.
Yeah, or are they the demon? I wonder.
That is true.
That's what I wonder too.
My day job, I work for a court.
Yeah.
And so I see that, I do felony cases. So we hear all that kind of stuff most days. So I get to see that up close and personal.
Yeah. We do another show of true crime today. And we do one called My Crazy Family. Both have many horrible stories of people doing horrible things to one another.
Yes, I can only imagine.
Yeah,
I see it daily too.
Exactly. And that's what makes me wonder more and more about this, from doing the ghost shows for years, but adding those in as well. just seeing another side of life and people. And it, you just, there's just no explanation or ways to wrap your mind around how someone got to the state of doing things like that.
Yeah, exactly. When you hear about the crimes, you just, like you said, you can't wrap your mind around what they did and the acts that they just committed, like it was nothing.
It's like, what's going through your head? What is going through the mind of someone who's literally like biting someone's breasts off? I mean,
exactly.
It's just like, what on, like, that's not a kink or something, or it's like, what the fuck is this?
Exactly.
Like, there's nobody going to the porn sites like the one where they bite her boobs off. That's what I want.
That's not a love nip. That's a little bit more.
Exactly. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Exactly.
I mean, it's just, yeah. Anyway, it's just kind of an off topic thing, but pertinent to what we're talking
about. That's another one of my passions. That the thought process of that fascinates me as well. Like, what in the hell are you thinking?
And at the end of the day, all you can say is, we won't understand because we don't function like that.
Exactly. I'm glad I don't understand.
Exactly. I mean, and I'm always trying to this is not an excuse for someone, but it's always good to understand the context to try and get where someone got it. And it is understandable in many cases, like through abuse and this or that, this person is acting this way or that way. But when it goes to such extremes, it's like, whoa.
There's some people that go through that same abuse and they're okay. So where, you know, what in their mind was different?
Yeah, what changed? What was, it's a whole other rabbit hole for another show. So Goatman's Bridge, people are feeling these things there. Tell me, is Goatman Bridge, what is this setting like? What am I looking at when I see Goatman's Bridge?
It's back and it's in a wooded area, and it's no longer in use. So it used to be the main area to go in and out of town.
Okay.
And now it's set off. There is a old Alton Road that's an actual road that people use. Uh-huh. So it's set off a little bit off of that, and then it's in the woods. So it's a real wooded area. And if you keep going back, there's horse trails, and it goes way back. But, you know, those people go out there, they do animal sacrifices. We've had people see like cats and dogs hanging. We've came across where people are trying to do rituals. There's like candles set up. There was one where there was a squirrel with the guts had been taken out on one side of the candles. You know, so there's people just always out there trying to, and I think that's actually what brings the bad stuff in.
Sure.
That area is people doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was just going to ask if this is, you know, a tourist destination for, you know, giving a tour and checking it out, but are people still doing things there? And you just answered that. Has there been other, I mean, so is it always a negative feeling when you're out there, or does it kind of depend on the day and what spirits are lingering?
No, it's not. Like I said, when you encounter Oscar, which is crazy to me because we've had EVPs and we've been going out there for several years, and I've gotten different ones on different days, different years, and it's the same voice.
Mm-hmm.
And he's actually more protective. My friend had been out there with a group, and it was about to storm. You know, we get tornadoes here.
Yeah.
And he heard that equipment started going crazy, and it was almost like, hey, you know, y'all need to go kind of thing. So he's more protective.
Mm-hmm.
And there's other spirits that are out there, and they're playful. There's one that you can sense her. Her name is Eleanor. You can sense her through smells. So you smell like, you know, baking bread, heavy perfume. We smell that a lot. So it's not always negative. And it's crazy because there's two different sides of the bridge. When you cross to one side of the woods, that area seems to be lighter. And when you go to the other side, it's the atmosphere is darker.
Yeah.
And that's where you see, you know, they hear growls. They've seen red eyes in the woods, that kind of stuff. But it's just crazy because from one side of the bridge to the other.
Wow. I mean, it sounds like much more than your average local haunted bridge story.
It really is.
Yeah, because there's so many towns. It's like, well, there's this bridge and a woman threw the child off, and it's all kind of unsubstantiated shit. And people, it's just that you sit here and the children's hands will push you off the bridge.
Exactly.
Every town has that story. It's just like one of the first I've heard where it's like there's a much more in-depth thing. And when people are out there, you know, doing their rituals or investigating or whatever they're up to, They invite things in that have nothing to do with the bridge. Is that where we get the, like, the woman that has the perfume and the baked goods and things of that nature that, like, hey, guess where you're going to hang out now because somebody brought you here. You're at a bridge in the middle of Texas.
No, I think the nicer ones like that, I think they may have lived back in the village in the day.
Okay.
I think the more negative ones are the ones that are more brought in. And I have, like I said, friends that have abilities, and I've just been told, and I believe that this is more of an area that attracts what they call travelers, which are just people, the spirits that are, you know, not necessarily always out at the bridge, but they go through that area. It just attracts those kind of spirits. So there are spirits that are going in and out of there along with the ones that are already there.
It's the dead doing their own ghost tours. It's like,
where
should we go today? Like, let's go to that bridge. Let's go see what's going on there.
Wouldn't that be amazing? You still have stuff to do when you're dead.
I would love it. I hope I would totally be a ghost traveler. I would go everywhere and freak people out. It would just be so much fun. And that some days they're going to think
Yeah, absolutely. My friends and I always joke around like, all right, if I go, this is going to be my sign that it's me.
Yeah, like at the end of the day, if there's like a child standing too close to the edge of the bridge, I would do something to get them back. I'd be a good ghost then.
Right, exactly.
But then I would go freak the hell out of the parents for not paying attention to their child. And
oh, exactly. That's amazing.
Be like, well, we saved little Timmy here. Now you're going to think Lucifer is living in your backyard. So
hey, you won't let little Timmy go by the bridge again.
Exactly. Well, no one will leave the house eventually. Like, there's the pentagram in the garden again. Why do the daisies keep coming up in forms of 666? This is weird. Even more annoying is if they never noticed. They're like, well, it's just a beautiful daisies.
See, that would be my luck. Yeah, they're like, why did that? Yeah, whatever.
That's most people, like, completely overlooking, like, what's exactly in front of them.
Exactly.
Tell me more about, you know, obviously you were a tour guide there for some time. Tell me about some more of the things that you have done in terms of investigating and how you got more into that.
I have friends, and like I said, that we've met up with, and we go to different locations. We've been to Waverly Hills, Bobby Mackey's. There's several places here in Texas. I love the paranormal part of it, but I also love the history of it.
Yeah.
So I love the, you know, going out to places and learning the history and getting to see, you know, some of the places in the same condition from when they were, you know, left. That fascinates me. And I've been to different places around the United States as well.
What were some of the locations that you always wanted to go and visit that you then eventually did? And what was the outcome? What were your expectations met, and the places that really stood out to you historically that really kind of drove you to them?
The coolest one that I couldn't wait to go to was Waverly Hills Sanatorium. Mm-hmm. That place was amazing. It's huge. It's massive. And I've actually been out there twice now, but my expectations, you know, it was pretty much what I expected. And it was just amazing to be there and to see that part of history. Bobby Mackey's was interesting to me just because of the reputation. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Yes, I've had people on from Bobby Mackey's.
So, yeah. So, you know, the darkness of that era, that place.
Yeah.
So it was cool just to say that I've been there and, you know, my expectations. I don't know. I have feelings. If I go into a place, if I don't have a good feeling, I trust my gut feeling, right? I don't go to that part of the air, to the building. And I trusted that when I went to Bobby Mackey's, I was like that. There was a couple of areas I just wouldn't go to. And we actually had a few people that were with us that one was actually an older gentleman. He'd been doing this his whole life. I don't know. He won't really tell us to this day what happened, but he was up in the caretaker's room. And it was less than an hour of us being there. And he wanted to leave, ended up staying. But to this day, he will not go on any investigation or any place that he knows it's haunted. He will not go to those places, period. Fascinates me.
Yeah. What happened?
Like I said, he to this day won't really even talk about it. I know that they were doing something with trigger objects. I think he got pushed something. He will not go into the detail of what happened.
For the audience that is not aware and is not going to go back into the archive at this second to hear the story of Bobby Mackey's, why don't you share some of the darkness and some of the things that you're aware of the history there?
I know it. That there used to when Bobby Mackey's got it, he never. And the crazy thing to me is he doesn't believe in the paranormal.
He
to
doesn't.
This day.
Yeah,
and that's amazing to me. But his wife allegedly got possessed. Carl, who is a caretaker as well, but they performed an exorcism there, which is crazy to me. And there's just it used to be a butcher shop, I believe, and there was a murder in the basement. But there's also a location that's like the lower part of Bobby Mackey's that's supposed to have like some sort of portal that's really dark.
Yeah, and what's interesting is it's a place, you know, people play there and people go there for fun, to enjoy it. And I mean, when someone's not investigating, of course, and it can be a very happy place at times, but then also so negative at the same time. It's a very interesting kind of yin and yang of that location.
Yeah, that you're right. They'll have the bar area, the honky tonk people, the bands come play, and then it closes down and people come in and investigate. It's crazy.
Yeah, there's a lot there. Waverly Hills, obviously one of the bigger ones that everyone talks about. And, you know, it's almost like the United States ghost mecca or something.
Yes. Yeah. Like, that was like a bucket list type thing, going to that, just to say, you know, it was cool to go to there.
To see it. Yeah. Yeah. Hill House in Mineral Wells, Texas. I'm not aware of that one. What's the history there?
They have all tons of history there. And that's actually one of the most active places I've been to. I don't know if you've heard of the Baker Hotel in Mineral Wells.
I think so.
Yeah. So it is literally across the street from the Baker Hotel. And the Baker Hotel was a huge hotel, I believe around in the 20s.
Okay.
But everyone went to Mineral Wells because of the spring water there.
Yeah.
So the Baker Hotel, literally there was celebrities, there was presidents, that kind of stuff that would go in and out of there. And they're actually restoring that. And I would love to go there. But Hill House is literally across the street from there. And it's just got, it used to be a bordello. There used to be several different things, but there's been several murders in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the locations that I didn't really know a lot about, but I've gone there several times. And that's one of the places I've gotten the most activity, which is crazy. So that's one of my favorite places to go.
Tell me about your experiences there. As you walked in the door, what did it feel like?
It's one of those locations that's a heavier feeling. It's definitely not like, you know, a bunch of nice, kind spirits that are trying to welcome you in. It's a more heavy feel. And they definitely, the people that own the house, they're great people. They do play that up. But it is a different feeling. I was in there. There's a room that leads off into an attic. And I don't know. I feel like this is in a lot of places, too. There was a kid who was mentally ill or had some sort of defect, and they kind of hit him away in this room. And there's only one way in and out of the room, and it's kind of like an attic, but it's like a little hallway, and it leads to his room, and they keep that door locked. And I was sitting up against that door, and we were just in there talking with friends and, you know, doing our investigation, and we hear some knocks on the wall, and I literally felt the door against my back, like pushing, like someone was trying to come out, and there was no one there but us. So that was crazy. We've had good EVPs there. We've had stuff, you know, flown off the walls while we're sitting there and we watch it happen. We've had a lot of activity there.
What's the cause of the haunting at Hill House in Mineral Wells?
There is, like I said, there have been several murders. It's been a while. You know, when I did the tour, they go through all of them. But I tend to think in all the places that you go to, they over-exaggerate
sure.
the amount of murders.
Yeah.
So, I mean, allegedly there's been murders around the building, in the house, and there was like 10 murders that happened there, which I think is a little excessive. But again, I think in a lot of these locations there is like one main thing that brings stuff in, but when you open it into a tourist attraction like we do, basically you just have all these people, you don't watch them all night, they're there all night long and they're doing their experiments, they're calling stuff in. So I think it's just in any of those locations, I think it's in a mix of something that did happen there that caused the haunting. And then when there's that many people, that many nights a week, just doing all sorts of experiments, it's just going to bring stuff in.
Have you noticed over the years, locations that maybe you visited several years ago, then gone back to since in more recent times, where activity is more active. I know that's quite a way to phrase the sentence. Is it more active than it was in the past? Has it increased, I think is the word I'm looking for, than where it was years ago because of the paranormal tourism, if you will?
I really haven't, but the ones I've gone to, it's they've already been established and been in and out. I would be curious to go to a location, you know, that is just first opening up. to see if it, that's a good theory to see, you know, if there's a lot more activity that happens. But the places I've been, it's just been, it's been that way. You know, people have been going in and out of it.
It's an interesting one, because the perspective would be the key thing there to judge that on.
Yes.
I mean, when we talk about this, and we talk about haunted locations and the ones that are open up for investigators to go and do what they will there, is there a danger in any of that where, you know, everybody is kind of doing their own thing? And yes, there is an initial haunting. Are we going to get some of these places to a point where they're so active with so many different things that it literally becomes a hazard to even go into them, or the building just ends up burning down because of, you know, it's like fire. We don't know what caused it, but it's like, well, there's a lot of things in there that could have caused it.
Yeah. I mean, I think in any investigation, it can be dangerous if you don't really protect yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not one of those investigators that goes out and, you know, just taunts, calls and that kind of stuff. And I'm very cautious whenever I leave a location. I do. And, you know, they don't talk about it on any of the shows or anything, but any good investigator will do a protection prayer, not necessarily religious or anything. It's just pretty much, you know, anything you've encountered, you're not going to come home with me type of deal.
Yeah.
And people that don't know what they're doing, they go and they open themselves. You don't know what you're opening yourself to in any of these locations, you know, so it's not safe just to go in and be like, hey, who's here? Anyone talk to me? Because there is good and there is bad. I 100% believe that. And when you're opening yourself like that, you're opening yourself to anything. So you want to talk about the D word, the demons. They need to be invited in. So you don't want to go into a location that you know is, you know, evil or has dark spirits and just say, hey, you're welcome to me. I've seen people do that, you know, use me, touch me. To me, that's when you get your attachments, that kind of stuff. I don't necessarily think that the location would get so bad, like you said, that has to burn down, that kind of thing. But I do think people who like own the place or are there too much, I think it begins to affect them mentally. And I think that's the danger, is more the people. I think they need to just not absorb themselves so much in the location.
How do you go into a haunted location to investigate without opening yourself up? I understand. Don't say, don't like use me to do this or that. Use me as your vessel. Yeah, that's a pretty much an invite. But if you don't know what you're communicating with, how do you get into the investigation mode and begin some sort of communication without in some way opening yourself up and saying, let's talk?
Yeah. And you do open yourself a little. And I think it's more important if you're going to location, more know the history. If there's specific, you know, like little Susie died in the pantry, see if you can communicate with little Susie, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think any of these instruments we use, you know, I love dowsing rods, but the spirit box, any of that stuff, I think that could be just as dangerous as a Ouija board if you're not careful. But it's just, I believe, I don't know, you just have to be very careful on how you're doing that. You're specific. I don't go out there and just say, hey, anyone come out here, anyone do this. And sometimes it's just us in there. We set up the equipment and we're just talking. Because I think if you're constantly asking questions like, what's your name? Who's here? Man, if I was a spirit, I'd be get sick of people doing that. You know, constantly every night coming through, what's your name? What do you do? Move a box, move this. So sometimes we just set up and we just talk and we have stuff go on. So it's just,
yeah.
I think it's the way you go about it. You don't taunt, you know, hey, screw you, fuck you, I'm in your house. What are you going to do about it? Type. It's just your attitude and it's the way you are.
Sure. Sure. Have you ever, obviously that's not what you do, but have you ever inadvertently had something too close for comfort where maybe it did attach or you kind of felt like I'm out. This is somebody I don't want to be talking with right now.
I do. And I've had, like I said, I listen to my gut feelings and I've had a situation because my daughter, actually, she's 16 now, but she's been going with me to these locations.
Mm-hmm.
So if she's with me, I tend to be more cautious.
Sure.
And I have had where it got a little close. I got scratched. The communication got dark. And I actually had one and I have it on a cam. We had a tour guide, which is one of the ones I'm talking about when they're in the location too much. He was there with us showing us around and he physically changed. Like I look over to the guy and he was pale, like drained of color and couldn't speak, couldn't move. And we had to get him out of the location. And as soon as we get him out of there, he brightened back up. But to me, that was, you know, it's fun and it's to go out and do these investigations, but it's when it's something that's going to affect you to that point, then yeah, then that's when I'm out.
Did he know
that on me or on my daughter?
Sure. Sure. And my daughter, I'm a single dad and my daughter is coming with me on, we don't really investigate much. She co-hosts one of the shows with me and we talk about stuff. But every once in a while, we'll just kind of go out and do a little, you know, just our version of investigating, nothing super serious, but it's always, you know, interesting to see what their perspective is on this stuff. Versus what mine would be from having, you know, more experiences. Do you ever learn anything from your daughter while you're out investigating?
Not really. Cause she cracks me up. She's not as into it as I am. Mm-hmm. So she'll participate in it, but then she will like, usually, you know, we're there all night around 12, one in the morning, she's asleep. Like we'd be in Waverly Hills and she's asleep in one of the floors by herself, and we're out everywhere else. So at some point, but she does get effective. Like, so she does get feelings in certain places where she will just say, I don't want to go there. And obviously I'm not going to force her to go there. So she'll either stay behind at the hotel or something.
Sure.
So, then when she does that, I kind of, you know, sit back and listen, like what's going on with this place, that, you know, it's giving her a bad feeling type of deal.
Sure. Yeah. And it's always something where I love that she's into it, but there is that scary stuff sometimes where it's like, I don't know that I really want to, you know, take the chance of walking through this place with her of, you know, what could be.
Because you always hear those stories that, you know, something happens to the kids and attaches to them kind of thing. I don't want to be responsible for that.
Yeah. You had said earlier, you know, like Ouija boards, ghost boxes, things of that nature. I'm curious as to your perspective on that of, are they all, essentially, do they all hold the same sort of danger with them where you're asking for communication through a device, whether it be a ghost box or a Ouija board? Is a ghost box just a modern version of a Ouija board, or an obelisk a modern version of a Ouija board that would hold the same dangers as what a Ouija board would?
I think they do. I don't know, for some reason there's a different energy with the Ouija boards. And I don't know if it's something, you know, that's intended with the user, but I think to some point with the spirit boxes and all that stuff, cause you're, like you said, there's no way to communicate with a spirit without essentially open yourself up to some point.
Yeah.
So there is some sort of danger, and there is, you have to be careful. Like we always, like I said, we do the protection prayer. We do the, you know, goodbye kind of thing, you know, just to thank the spirits kind of stuff. But I think there is an inherent danger and you have to be careful in what you're doing.
Sure. When you say you go to a haunted location, you do things to keep yourself safe. What do you walk through? What do you do to keep yourself and keep a distance from something attaching or things to go negative? Personally, what do you do?
So I personally, you know, like I told you, I grew up with my mom, who's very religious, but I do believe in God and all and everything.
Yep.
So I have my crosses, that kind of stuff that I wear with me. We have holy water that if it's a really particularly dark location that we will spray ourselves, you know, it's like a spray that we use before we leave. But I think it's, you know, it just depends on the person's belief, which that's another thing that fascinates me, you know, with it's all on your belief. I believe, like I said, in God and Jesus. There's people who are Buddhist and that protects them.
Yeah.
So it's all in what you believe. If you're a Native American, you know, you have your ancestors. It's whatever that you have a deep belief in faith in, because if you don't have faith, then whatever, like, you know, I have faith in my cross that it's going to protect me. So that's what helps it. It's not necessarily only that religion, right? It's your faith in that it's going to protect you.
It's more so the intent.
Exactly.
And not just like, hey, I'm going to fuck around here, but I'm holding a crucifix, so I'm good.
Exactly.
You have
if you
to
don't
like,
believe in it, then, it, you know, you could be holding a piece of paper. It's the same difference.
Sure, sure. And that's interesting, because then it goes to, well, what is protecting you other than your intent and your belief system, especially when we're talking about all these different belief systems? And I think, especially when you get into any of them, at some point, they're going to say, we're the only right one. And so what is that when someone has that intent and they have this fervent faith in one specific thing and the other one has it in another, what is protecting on all of these at a similar level?
You know, I think there is a great being out there. It doesn't necessarily, you know, maybe we all call it different things. I don't know. That's one of the things that does fascinate me.
Yeah.
Because it's not necessarily, to me, it's not, well, okay, my religion, this is the only way, this is all that protects you. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. Like, and if it's your faith and your belief, there's something out there watching out for us, right?
Yeah.
And your belief and your faith is what's going to protect you. And like I said, you know, I work for the Warren Foundation too, and we help people. And I've talked to people who do exorcisms, and it's just fascinating to me because they did say that depending on their religion, that's how you have to go into that house. Mm-hmm. So if I'm going to someone who's super Catholic, you're going to, you know, have your Catholic faith. If you have someone, like I said, who's Native American or someone who's Wiccan, you have to go in there with that kind of faith. So mm-hmm. there's something, and it works, right? So it's working. So there's something out there.
Yeah.
That's watching over us, but not necessarily, I don't think, like, it's one religion or over yeah. the other.
Maybe it's more human that we get caught up in the semantics of it, where at the end of the day, it's like, hey, guess what? You all have these different names for me. I'm Herb. Like, my name was Herb.
Exactly.
Like, you all called me this, you all called me that. My name's Herb. You fucked it up the whole time, but it was me. It was me.
Exactly. I was kicked back here drinking a beer and hanging out with all y'all.
Exactly. It's like, and you know what? I don't like half of those songs y'all made. That organ really kind of sucked. Y'all thought you were like playing these great music for me. I fucking shut it out. I put on my AirPods and I went to silent mode.
So absolutely, 100%. He's like, I hated that shit.
So all you are into your Christian rock, it doesn't fucking play here. I don't care that you brought your guitar. Shut the fuck up.
Exactly. Exactly, 100%.
That would be amazing.
I think that though, really.
I think that would be wonderful because I mean, one of the last things I want to hear for all of eternity is light Christian rock or something.
Oh, God.
like
that would be hard.
Like, do you really like this? I know it's about you, but do you really like this?
No, never. I'm like, and quit playing it for me, damn it.
Exactly.
That would be amazing.
That wraps up our conversation with Lila. A big thank you to her for joining us in the program and sharing her experiences today. And thank you to you for keeping us on the air and supporting our program. Until next time, for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.